Gutvach. First of all, thank you all for joining us tonight on the conference call. It's important to realize that nobody really knows who's here, who's not here. There's no pressure for anybody to call in. You're only on the phone right now because you all want this internal drive. You have an internal drive to want to prepare for the Yom HaDin, to want to be Zoche B'Din, and that itself, I think, is one of the most significant ways to be Zoche B'Din. The fact that we feel the trepidation that we are at an Erev Yom HaDin, that we're in the Erev Yom HaKadosh V'Hanorav, Rosh Hashanah. There was a story that I saw somewhere going back to the days in the shtetl in Europe. There was once an argument between a Gentile wholesaler of whatever items he was a wholesaler, and there was a Jewish shopkeeper who was asking for credit. And it was this time of year, and there was an argument. The wholesaler didn't want to extend the credit. The shopkeeper was asking for the credit so that he could put the products on himself. And in the context of this argument, the Gentile had a Gentile friend who whispered into the wholesaler's ears, who was also a Gentile, and says, "I don't know what your problem is. Why do you have to worry about a Jew's word? Don't you know it's Elul now?" Well, we're no longer in the midst of Elul. We're at the end of Elul. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah. We're standing at a place where there's so much on the line. And I want to talk about a few items that could perhaps help us in our preparations to indeed be Zoche B'Din come Rosh Hashanah Haba Aleinu Letova. The Mishnah Rosh Hashanah and Daf Tezayin writes, of course, the famous line, Kol Bay Olam Over Lefanav Kivnei Maron, that line that made its way into the Tefillah of Rosh Hashanah, of Yom HaKippurim. And the unusual language is Kol Bay Olam. It doesn't say Kol Yisrael, it's Kol Bay Olam. Everybody's judged. Even we say in the Machzori, the Malachim Yechafez Mechil Ra'adu Yochezun, Hinei Yom HaDin, the Malachim realize that they're standing B'Din. If it's applicable to even the Malachim, certainly Kol Bay Olam applies not just to Jews, but all human beings. Which is sort of a funny thing, because as you walk to shul on Monday morning, on Tuesday morning, we realize that we're walking into the Beis HaMishpat on some level, and yet down the block we see other people driving by, blasting their music, getting onto the train, after all it's a work day. And how funny is it that on the same time as we're going into the Yom HaDin, they're going into the same Yom HaDin that we are, Kol Bay Olam Over Lefanav, and yet we know that where we're going. We realize how fortunate we are to have the awareness, to have the knowledge that it's Yom HaDin, that enables us to have the focus and to spend the time focusing on generating the best result. Imagine a person goes to, you know, imagine you're being watched by somebody who's going to decide, are they going to employ you or not, so that you have they install a camera watching you. If you know that you're being watched, you could put on your best behavior. You go on a date, you put on your best behavior on a date. If a person is just being watched from a distance, like, you know, a father-in-law wants to see a future prospective son-in-law, so he goes into the yeshiva, stands in the back, looks down, tries to watch, you know, that fellow that they're proposing for his daughter. Is he a good, is he serious about his learning? Is he concentrating? Does he daven nicely? If you know you're being watched, it's so much easier to do a good job and put on a good show. The havdil, we have the zechus, we have the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful gift, not just to be judged on Rosh Hashanah, but to know that we're being judged. That itself is a tremendous bracha that is unique to Klal Yisrael, even though everybody, all those other people who are on their way to work and on their way on the trains, going wherever they're going and drinking their lattes in Starbucks, they're equally being judged. We have the zuchus to know that we're being judged. I saw in the Sefer HaRokeach, he quotes a psikta who asks an interesting question, which we have a different answer to. He asks the question of how come we blow the shofar not during Shachris, but during Musaf. Now, the Gemara discusses this. The Gemara says that there was a time period in history that, of course, originally they did blow the shofar at Shachris, because like all mitzvahs, the reason makdimin lemitzvah, you're supposed to do a mitzvah as early in the day as you can. And yet, the Gemara says that there was a certain time period, whatever persecution Klal Yisrael found themselves under, and the army came in and saw the people that the Jews were gathered, and they thought it was the shofar blast was a call to arms. They came and they killed the people in shul because they thought they were attacking or something. So therefore, the Gemara tells us that we delay the tekiyah shofar. Instead of doing it shachris, we do it at Musaf. So this way, nobody will accuse us. Nobody will think that we're gathered to fight or to rebel or anything. That's what the Gemara says. But the Psikta says a different answer to that question that we have of why don't we dat, why don't we blow the shofar in the morning during Shachas? Why do we wait till later in the day, till Musaf? And the Psikta says the following. So that, says the Psikta, b'shah sha'omdim b'din, at the moment that we are going to ultimately be standing in din, let it be that we are melei in mitzvos. Let it be that we're already filling up ourselves with mitzvos. V'yizku b'din. So that if we're in the middle of davening, we've been davening all morning, that same din that we're having, instead of it being early in the morning, let it be in the middle of the day when we're in the midst of davening, we have all the tefillos, we have all the amens, all the brachas that we made through our tefillos, that gives us the bracha that we could not just be nidon, not just be omid b'din, but have the opportunity to know that we're omid b'din, and therefore prepare ourselves. And that's what I hope the goal of this phone call will be. It will be to, since we have that gift of knowing that we are going to be omid b'din in less than 24 hours, or perhaps it will be, the din itself might be a little bit more than 24 hours, but here that we have a few minutes to join together to try to prepare ourselves. I'd like to make two or three points in the course of this shir, this discussion tonight. Number one, the Mishnah, when it describes our standing bedin, has a very unusual image. Kol bay olam ovrim lefanav kivnei maron. We stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu bedin. We pass before. It doesn't say we stand, it says we pass. It doesn't say we stand in judgment, it says we pass before Hashem kivnei maron. And that phrase is a very elusive phrase. The Gemara says, what in the world do those two words mean? Bnei maron. Children of Maron, people of Maron. Excuse me, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol B'dvaro. And the Gemara gives three different explanations what it means that we stand before Hashem Kivnei Maron. Number one, we stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu like Bnei Amrana. The word Maron means sheep. Just like Rashi explains, just like when sheep are gathered together to figure out which one, the new baby sheep have to be separated to figure out which one is the Meiser Behema, which ones were born this year, and which one of the ones that were born this year should be brought as a korban. The way we figure out which is the 10th sheep which has to be brought as a korban is, Rashi explains, they would all be put in a corral, in a pen, with a small door, and a small door that was wide enough only for one to leave at a time, one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. And the owner would be able to mark the 10th one as the Meiser sheep, the sheep that has to be brought as the Meiser Behema. Point is that we pass before Hashem one at a time. That's the first definition that the Gemara provides. The second definition, the Gemara says, that it's kebeis kemailas beis maron, that the way we passed before Hashem was like a mountain pass. A place, there was a place called Maron, the mailas beis maron, the cliff, or the heights of Maron. And there Rashi explains there was a very narrow mountain pass. There was a cliff on the right, a cliff on the left. And it was such a narrow mountain pass that only one person could pass at a time. If any of you saw the newspaper articles over the summer where Mount Everest had the most, more people died climbing at Mount Everest this year than ever before, because there are certain parts of the climb where you can only go single file, and there were delays, there were bottleneck delays on the people climbing up, and people didn't have enough oxygen, and they were on a narrow mountain pass, and they just, you know, if you're on a narrow mountain pass, there's a danger, you have to go one at a time. That's base maron. That's mindless base maron. Again, the point is that we stand in front of Hashem, single file, one at a time, no room to be with anybody else, just ourselves. Finally, the Gemara gives a third explanation. What does it mean that we pass before Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, Kivnei Maron? Mar, says the Gemara, Mar is the lashon of authority. As those men of authority, the Gemara explains, those people who are the army, the soldiers in Beis David, the authority of the, when they would go out to war, when they would go out to battle, their generals would count them one at a time to see how many people he had, how many soldiers were under his command. The point of these three different Gemara, these three different definitions, these three explanations of the word Kivnei Maron is really one point. These are different ways to demonstrate that every individual experiences a unique judgment. No two people are judged the same. Every person has their unique personality, with their unique challenges and the environmental factors that they were born with, the genetic predispositions that they were born with. And we realize as we stand in front of Hashem that Hashem looks at me, at nobody else. He doesn't compare me to anybody else. He understands me for whom I am. And that is a very consoling, that's a very comforting type of understanding when I look at myself in judgment, because I realize Hashem's not going to judge me why I wasn't, you know, David HaMelech, why I wasn't Rebbe Kveig, or why I wasn't the Gra. I didn't have brains like him, I didn't have an environment like him, I didn't live in a time that's the time that we live in is such full, so much full of different kinds of nisyonos, Hashem's not going to compare me, and I could be very comforted. But on the other side, there's a flip to that coin. There's another side to that perspective. Because if Hashem judges me, just me by myself, without anybody with me, just me, one single file passing through out of that pen one at a time, or climbing up that mountain pass one at a time, or walking out to battle one at a time to be counted, Hashem also realizes the unique gifts that He gave me and nobody else. The unique talents that Hashem gave me and nobody else. Those special brachos that He endowed me and nobody else. And when we realize that, that carries with it a certain sense of responsibility, that sense of, wow, it's not just a matter of what averas did I do or what didn't I do. Have I been able to use all those brachos, all those talents, all those gifts, all those abilities, all those unique things that I have, that I bring to the table, have I used them as I could for myself, to elevate my family, to elevate the people around me, to increase Kvod Hashem in the world, at work, in shul, in the Beis Medrash. On Rosh Hashanah, we're judged, of course, single file, but we're judged as to our capacity to fulfill our duties in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's army. And obviously, our potential roles in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's army for the coming year is defined by last year's performance. If last year I performed well in his army, so he's going to want to set me up for this year to also have a good position in his army. When we read the words in the Machzor, Maisa Ish of Kudaso, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu examines not just Maisa Ish, not just our actions, our inactions, but also of Kudaso, our mission. We each have our unique talents, we each have our unique gifts, that we have to bring something to the table. And that's something that we have to sort of imagine for ourselves. What are we bringing to the table as we stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Not just how I fit in with everybody else, that's a different point. But me, myself, what are the brachas that I have? What are the endowments that only I know about that I could serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with? But what's interesting, even though in most of our minds we think of Rosh Hashanah as Yom HaDin, the din, the judgment, is really a sideshow. That's not really the main point. The main point of Rosh Hashanah, and is certainly indicated in our Machzor like this, is one word, Malchus. Malchus. Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimloch. The number of times that we are going to say the word Melech or some variation of the word Melech is incredible. There are probably hundreds of times that we're going to mention that word Melech over the course of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Our avoda, of course, Chazal tell us, is Imru Lefanei Malchus Shetam Lichuni Aleichem. The main part of Musaf, which is the way that we're going to be Zochah, but then is somehow Shetam Lichuni Aleichem, and us being Mamlech Hashem is very much connected to the fact that He judges us, but it's not the same thing. They're two different points. We're Mamlech Hashem, it's a renewal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus. So it also happens to be the perfect time for Him to reassess what role all of His subjects play in His kingdom. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to decide what to do, how His Malchus is going to continue, how His Malchus will be rolled out for the coming year. So when He takes Kivyachol an account of what His kingdom should look like for the coming year, He has to figure out where we all play. So Mimele it ends up being, not because it's a day of Yom HaDin, to the contrary, it's a day of Malchus, but to the extent that it's a day of Malchus, okay, so it has to be Yom HaDin also, to see how we could, what role we're each going to play in that Malchus of Hashem. How do each of us stand in the strategic plan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has? Does Hashem give us all the tools that we need to fulfill a mission going forward? Do we need our chayim? Do we need our life? Do we need our health? Do we need our parnas? Do we need our shalom bayis? If we have big jobs to do, then of course we do. If a person, chas v'shalom, is seen to not have done their mission, is not an integral part of that master plan, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at him and says, why do you need all these brachas if you're not doing the job that you do? So a beautiful anecdote that I saw from Rav Melech Biederman to illustrate this exact point. Somebody once asked Rav Avigdor Miller, what could I do to be Zocha B'din on Rosh Hashanah? Okay, it's a question that we could all ask, you know, go to your Rebbe, go to your Rav, and what could I do to be Zocha B'din? Victor Miller answered with one word. He said you should smile. No. You should smile. The fellow who asked him, what do you mean, I should smile? Because I'll smile, that will get me, I'll be zocheh b'din. So Avigdor Miller told him, you think just because I'm old, I don't understand you, I misunderstood your question? No, let me explain. Let's say you have a businessman. A big CEO has to figure out what to do, how to set up his strategic plan. So he reviews his balance sheets and he realizes that unfortunately they have to lay off some workers. The only way they could keep the budget balance is they're going to have to lay off some workers. So he has a consultant and the consultant tells him, you know what, there's this one worker, that guy in the back, I don't know if he's the best worker. I don't know if he does everything that he's supposed to do. I don't know if he comes on time every day. I don't know if he leaves, on time or he leaves a little early. But I'll tell you one thing. He's a really smiley guy. He's happy. He's friendly. He greets everyone with a smile. People come to the store because they like schmoozing with him, like seeing him. He's an asset. It's not worth losing him. So Avigdor Miller explained that on Rosh Hashanah, Kadosh Baruch Hu Kivyachol does the same thing. He reviews the balance, he reviews the budget, the books, and he tries to figure out who, needs to be laid off, who not, whatever. But when he sees somebody who has the ability to bring simcha to other people, when he meets somebody, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu comes across somebody who brings joy to other people, Hashem says, looks at that person and says, I don't know if he deserves or he doesn't deserve, but even if he doesn't deserve, this is an asset to the team. This is an asset for other people's sake, for what he brings to other people. This is somebody I want to have in the team, because he's valuable, not just, maybe not for himself, but for the bigger picture. When we think of taking that idea into our own minds, maybe some of us could think about after we hang up on the phone, of how we could make ourselves into those assets for the team. How can we make ourselves a part of that strategic plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Yimar B'Kvod Shemayim? Maybe after you get off the phone call tonight in a few minutes, you could think, who can I invite for a meal, for Rosh Hashanah? Maybe people already taken care of Rosh Hashanah. Who could I invite for a Shabbos meal and Shabbos Shuva? Who in the community would be eating the Sudas HaMafsekas by themselves, would be breaking their fast after Yom Kippur by themselves? Who on Sukkot might need a Yontif meal? Maybe they shouldn't have to eat by themselves or eat in a Shul Sukkah. Maybe they could come to join me for a Sukkah. Maybe after this phone call with me, you could sit down with yourself and figure out who you could invite to your house for a Yontif meal over the next few weeks. That's the first part that I wanted to speak about this evening, about what it means to be Omid B'din, to stand on ourselves as a unique individual, and to make ourselves assets in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. But I want to focus on not the Din aspect, but the Malchus aspect. What does it mean that I'm Mamlech Hashem? What does it mean that I see myself as a subject of Hashem? The very first step of declaring Hashem Melech is to realize what it means that Hashem is Melech. Or maybe to say it in different words, how big is His kingdom? Or maybe in different words, how big is Hashem? Because if I realize how big Hashem is, then a lot of the work that I have to do over the course of the next 10 days is going to be very much different, is going to be colored very significantly by my understanding of who Hashem is. I'd like to share with you a very esoteric Gemara in Chagiga Daf Yud Gimel. I'm going to go through the Gemara, and it's going to be hard to understand, but afterwards I'm going to translate it very quickly and very easily into words that make sense to us. The Gemara says the following. How long does a person live? Well, Chazal tell us, okay, so we live 120 years. And the Gemara continues and says, fine, a human life is a human life. And then the Gemara says, min ha'aretz ad l'rakia. How long does it take to travel from the world where we are until the heavens? Now, it's not talking about the stratosphere. You just take you can get on a plane and get into the stratosphere in a few minutes. It's talking about the rakia, the heavens, and Shamayim. Gemara says it takes 500 years to reach the rakia. Okay. Then the Gemara continues and says, how thick is the rakia? To get past the rakia, we're trying to get towards the Kisei HaKavod up in Shamayim, whatever. Again, we're talking figuratively. How thick is that rakia, that thickness, to get through the rakia once I've reached the rakia? Says the Gemara, of Yosha rakia, the thickness of the rakia is again another 500 years. So we're now 1,000 years distance in our travels. And then the Gemara continues and says, V'chein, so too is 500 years between each of the seven rakiyas. It's another six rakiyas, that's 6 times 500, that's another 3,000. So we're now at around, I guess we're at 4,000 years of travel towards reaching the Kisei HaKavod. Gemara continues and says, and above that there are the Chayos HaKodesh, another 500 years. And then the Gemara says that the feet of the Chayos HaKodesh, the feet of the Chayos, again, we're talking about, not literally, we're talking about in figurative terms, the feet of the Chayos HaKodesh are Keneged Kulam. Just like to what are the 5,000 years of travel that we spoke about, the Ragli HaChayos, another 5,000 years themselves. Karsule, their thighs are another, are Keneged Kulam. That's 20,000, that's another 10,000 years of travel. And then each part of the Chayos HaKodesh, another is doubled all of the distance that it takes. Finally, it gets to the Lamala Mehen Kisei HaKavod. If you add all the, we don't have to go, the Gemara has 16 steps of describing how it takes, how long it takes, how far it is to travel from where we are until we reach the Kisei HaKavod. And if you do the math in that Gemara, it comes out to millions of years of travel to reach the Kisei HaKavod. What does it mean that the feet of the Chayos HaKodesh take 10,000 years to travel that distance? What does that mean to us? It doesn't mean that we have to get on a boat, we don't have to get on a plane and drive ourselves for 10,000 years to... In our language, let me take this Gemara and say it in a different way. And then we'll get to a point. How far away is the sun? Okay, the sun is 93 million miles away from Earth. Okay, that's the sun. The sun is the closest star. But there are hundreds of stars, there are thousands of stars, there are millions of stars. There may be billions, maybe more than billions of stars. How big is the universe? So, I'm happy to tell you, I Googled it just Erev Shabbos, and the universe that we know is 13 billion light years. That means if we would travel at the speed of light for 13 billion years, we would be able to travel the span of the universe. And I ask you, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created the universe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the Makom of the universe, we call HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makom because he's the place where all of existence occurs. These are all, whether you talk about light years or you talk about the years to travel up to the Rakia and the feet of the Chayos HaKodesh, they're just a poor attempt for us to try to imagine what does Ein Sof mean? What is infinity? To try to wrap ourselves around the concept of what is Hashem, which we can't. If I could just ask the people who are listening on this conference call to please press the mute button so we don't hear the conversations or the noise from your homes, if you don't mind. Please press the mute button if you're listening to this. What we're trying to do is we're trying to imagine for ourselves what is that infinity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, Rabbosai, this is the punchline. As we begin Shemona Esrei, if we would take a second, each of the Shemona Esreis over Rosh Hashanah, to think how puny we are, how incredibly gigantic, vast the universe is, HaKadosh Baruch, the creator of the universe, and say two things to ourselves. How small I am. How small I am, I'm a nothing, I'm a tiny infinitesimal molecule, klape, something that's so infinitely large. And then after we tell that to ourselves, say, and wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu really cares. That vast, incredible, infinite Ein Sof HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about what I am about to say to him, what I am about to daven, about me, little me Uri Orly, and little me, whoever I am, being mamlech, him. He cares about what I have to say. That's what it means when we say Imru Lefanai Malchios, when the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that the way we should be Zocha Bedin is to say Lefanai Malchios. What does it mean that we're being Mamlech Hashem? Realize the grandeur, realizing the vastness, realize how incredible HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And each time, every Pasuk of Malchios, that we talk about Hashem being the Melech, realize how big, what a big project we're embarking on standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, this is a thought that should be in our minds whenever we daven any Shemona Esrei. But at least on Rosh Hashanah, where there's the theme of Malchus, where we're supposed to focus on what it means that Hashem is a Melech, certainly, that's where it's most essential. We mentioned as we began the shir this evening, the lashon of the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Kol bay olam ovrim lefanav, we pass before him, kivnei maron, which we had different definitions of what pnei maron is. But the verb that the Mishnah chooses is a very unusual verb. Ovrim lefanav, we pass before him. Now, Rav Aaron Cutler asks, why does it say that we pass before him, ovrim lefanav? Asks Rav Aaron, why does it say we're judged? Kol bay olam nidonim kivnei maron. Kol bay olam nishpatim kivnei maron. We're judged. We're sentenced. Why does it say that we pass before him? I think that phrase that Chazal chose for the Mishnah to describe the judgment, to describe the Mishpat of Ovrim Lefanav, is to highlight what I just said a minute ago. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry, Chazal trying to impress on us that image of standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Directly in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not standing with my posse, not standing with my friends, not standing with my community, not standing with my family, just me, alone, standing with that stark awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu right in front of me. I can't be overlooked. I can't be ignored. Sometimes you try to blend in with your surroundings. You try to blend in with everybody else. I can't be ignored. I'm face to face with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking at me. That perspective, that way of looking at myself, of looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at that moment of din, is terrifying. It's incriminating. But it could also be incredibly redeeming, and I'll tell you why. Because it's not just me thinking how small I am in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, but it's me realizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares uniquely about me, little me. He doesn't just care about Klal Yisrael. He doesn't just care about the world. He doesn't just care about my community. He doesn't just care about my family unit. He cares about me as an individual. And therefore, it's a two-way street. I am judged in front of HaKadosh Baruch. That means I stand by myself. But it also means HaKadosh Baruch cares about me as myself. There's an incredible, beautiful Gemara in Chagiga, the very beginning of Chagiga. There's a mitzvah every Yantar, three times a year, to go up to Yerushalayim. It happens to be the Mishnah Paskins in the beginning of Chagiga that a Suma, a blind person, does not have to go to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And the Gemara Chagiga explains that even a Suma Ba'achas Me'enav, somebody who's blind even in only one eye, he doesn't have to go to Aliyah L'Regel. Well, the Gemara explains because the way the Torah describes the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel is not just go up to the Beis HaMikdash, but it's go see Hashem. Torah says, Yira, there's a Gzera Shava, and the Gemara tells us, Keder Sheba Liros, Kachba Liraos. Just as you go to see Hashem, so too you go up to Har Habayis on those three times a year to be seen by Hashem. Ma Liros Bishtei Einav, Af Liraos Bishtei Einav. Just like we look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu with two eyes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us with two eyes. In other words, Chazal are teaching us that when a person goes to Aliyah L'Regel, he's doing two things simultaneously. He's going to look at, imagine you go up to the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash is built, you go up with throngs and throngs of people, and you see the most incredible vision, you see that you sense the Kedusha is palpable, you sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you sense the Ruchnius, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing two things. He's allowing you to see him at the Aliyah L'Regel, but he's also looking at you. When I know that I'm being looked at, that's an incredibly empowering type of feeling, that as I stand in the same point as when I stand b'din, yes, HaKadosh Baruch is looking at me, but he's allowing me to be looked at by him. I mean, he cares about me, and that's why he's looking at me, and I have a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if I have that sense that it's just me, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is me, he cares about me, he cares what I do, he cares what I, kesher that I have with him, and if it's with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so grand, so vast, so infinite, so Ein Sof, so all of a sudden, the next 10 days of tshuva are very different. The next 10 days of tshuva are very different because all of a sudden I realize that I'm dealing with something very, very precious, very valuable, very big. It's sort of like when you're assigned to a project at work, and it seems like a media, nothing project. It's a little tiny task that your boss gives you. But if you only knew that this task that the boss just gave you is a task that's going to impact the entire company and thousands of employees and tens of thousands of clients and consumers, and your little project is going to impact all of that. So all of a sudden, your task, you take it, you deal with it with a very different kind of seriousness. If we realize the vastness, the infinitude, if that's a word, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the mitzvahs that He gives us, so when we come to tshuva over the aseres yemei tshuva, tshuva is much easier when I realize how much I'm dealing with, what significant things I'm dealing with. Well, the Baalei Mussar ask, how come Rosh Hashanah is the first 2 days of aseres yemei tshuva, they seem to be wasted? Tshuva, we know, has to have vidui. Tshuva, we know, has to have charata. And if you look through the entire machzer, you look through the entire liturgy of Rosh Hashanah, you find barely any reference to basically no vidui, no charata whatsoever. Yeah, there's one line in Avinu Malkeinu Chatanu Lefanecha, but other than that, there's not a reference, not a hint to vidui, not a hint to charata. How in the world is it going to be? How in the world are these 2 days, how are these days of Aseres Yemei Tshuva? And the answer is that it's a different kind of tshuva. It's a tshuva of reorienting our perception, redefining our perception of what is Hashem. Once we have a redefined perspective of what is Hashem, who is Hashem, who I am, how I stand in that, in front of the magnitude of what Hashem is, all of a sudden, the need to do tshuva, the desire to do tshuva, becomes so much easier. You know, when you teach a kid to bat a ball in baseball, one of the main things that you want them to be able to make sure that the ball that's coming to them from the pitcher, and they hit it with they make contact with their bat, you say to your kid, keep your eye on the ball. If you keep your eye on the ball, then somehow your mind and your eye, your coordination, will make the bat hit the ball. Rosh Hashanah is that point. Rosh Hashanah is the day that we keep our eye on the ball. When we have that clear perspective of what Avodas Hashem could mean, it's a gift, it's a mitzvah, a halacha that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's so great, who's so gigantic, who's so ginormous. All of a sudden, every halacha becomes meaningful, every mitzvah becomes meaningful, not because of the halacha or the mitzvah per se, but because it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's so great. That's a point that Rabbeinu Yonah points out in Shai Tshuva. He says, when a person looks at, takes inventory of their aveiros and their mitzvos, a person shouldn't look only at the size or the significance. Oh, it's only a din derabanan, come on. Oh, it's only a little halacha. Oh, it's only a little sif and a sif katan. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, don't look at the size or the magnitude of the mitzvah. Look at the magnitude, says Rabbeinu Yonah in Shai Tshuva, of the mitzvah. Don't look at the magnitude of the mitzvah. Look at the godless ha-mitzvah. It's not a question of how big the halacha is. Is that this halacha or any halacha that Hashem sends our way is coming from Him, coming from that infinite infinitude of the Ein Sof of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that enables us to have a new appreciation for every halacha that we have to deal with and ultimately spend the following week to do tshuva on. I want to share with you an incredible, and with this we'll finish off, an incredible perspective of the Aruch HaShulchan. When the Gemara talks about blowing shofar, we know that we blow shofar numerous parts in the Rosh Hashanah davening. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Tezayin, Amar Aleph, Amar Beis, asks, how come we blow the shofar twice? We blow the tekios between Shachris and Musaf, and then we blow tekios again later, during Musaf, towards the end of Musaf, the second part of Musaf. Why do we blow tekios twice? Each one would have fulfilled the mitzvah independently. We don't have to blow that many to fulfill the mitzvah. And the Gemara answers, La'arbe ves ha-satan. To confuse the satan. And the Gemara says, when you do the mitzvah twice, somehow that confuses the satan, which we have to explain, of course. And that's why we have a double set of blowing. And that's why it's not enough to do it once, you do it twice. Rashi says, because when you blow the shofar, you show your chibub ha-mitzvah. Because when you do something again and again and again, it shows that you're not just doing it because you have to, it shows that you want to do it, the lashon of Rashi. So he won't prosecute. The Satan hears us blowing twice, he won't prosecute. Why? When he hears us be mechabiv, showing our love, our desire for mitzvos, all of a sudden, his words just become confounded. His words get stuffed up. He has nothing to say. So I want to share with you an incredible Aruch HaShulchan, what that means. Why is it that we blow twice? Well, we mentioned earlier that there was a time in history that we blew just in the morning, just at Shacharis. And like I mentioned, at some point there was some, I don't know if it was a Roman prosecution or some other government that was, I don't know if it was an Eretz Yisrael, not an Eretz Yisrael, there was some gzeira that the secular authorities came in and saw us blowing our shofar, and they killed whoever was there. They thought we were rebelling. They took it hostage. Whatever it was, they made it very difficult for us. They destroyed the people who thought they were rebelling, and therefore we don't do it during Shacharis. So what's the question? The question is, okay, so if we're not going to do it during Shacharis, let's do it during Musaf. Why do we still keep the poskim say that we do? The reason why we don't just do Musaf, we do it again after Shacharis, before Musaf, is because even though there was the gzeira that stopped us from doing the blowing in the morning, we didn't want to totally forget about that. So therefore, right after Shacharis, we do a blowing to remember the blowing that we used to do during Shacharis. And then we do the real blowing during Musaf. That's what Chazal say. Asks Aruch HaShulchan, wait a second. What was it when we had the gzeira? In the gzeira, when we had this gzeira, originally the original version of blowing shofar was just in the morning during Shacharis, just one set during Shacharis. And then, because something terrible happened to Klal Yisrael, what did we do? We started blowing not during Shacharis, but during Musaf. But that's not what Klal Yisrael did. After we had that terrible event, whatever that happened in some shul somewhere in the world, where the Jews were destroyed, were killed on Rosh Hashanah as because they were blowing the shofar, we didn't just switch it from Shacharis to Musaf. We decided to keep a commemoration of that original type of blowing after Shacharis, soon after Shacharis, which is the first set of tekiyas. And then we went and instituted a new set of tekiyas during Musaf to be the new version. Says Aruch HaShulchan, look at this. Before the gzeir, before something terrible happens to Bnei Yisrael, how do we do a mitzvah? We do a mitzvah once. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a terrible gzeira, and a shul is destroyed. And what do we do now? We blow the shofar two separate times. Says Aruch HaShulchan, that's what the Gemara means. When we show that we blow the shofar again once, and then we blow the shofar a second set of times. And why do we do it? Because of the gzeira? The satan has nothing to say. What could the satan try to say? Well, how could he try to prosecute? You could say he's going to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, these Jews, give them a terrible year, give them a terrible year, give them a terrible year. Well, Mr. Satan, look what we did. Look how we reacted. What happened when we had a terrible gzeira? What did we do? We just committed ourselves to mitzvahs even more so, with a greater fervor, with a greater vigor, with greater enthusiasm, with more love. We, instead of not having the tekiyos during Shacharis, we decided to have it during Musaf, and also to have another one right after Shacharis to remember the original gzeira, to remember the original tekiyos. So in other words, what we're telling the Satan by blowing twice is that you want to send something our way to make our lives difficult, Mr. Satan. You just watch me. You watch how I'm going to react. You're going to try to hurt me? You'll see. The more you hurt me, the more I'm going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the Satan sees us with that attitude, that we blow in the morning and we blow again, and he sees that he brought a gzeira to destroy a shul and Klal Yisrael as they were blowing the shofar, and it just generated more tchib of HaMitzvahs, doing mitzvah again and again, he's nothing to say. Whatever the Satan will say will not be able to be effective. He's going to just keep his mouth shut. That's what it means. As we blow, because we blow numerous times, we show that chib of HaMitzvah, mistaten tanozo, because he realizes, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that whatever he tries to prosecute, whatever gzeiros he tries to send us, a Jew reacts differently. A Jew redoubles their connection, their desire to come closer to Hashem, not because of, but despite whatever is sent our way. I want to finish with a beautiful Sfarno. We blow the shofar to coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to declare him as the Melech, Melech over the vastness of the infinite world that we just described, and more significantly, like the Bali Musar point out, to be Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu on ourselves, on our own neshamas, on our own lives, the lives of our families, the lives of our community. We're Mamlech Hashem, we commit ourselves to do His will. But as we do that, the Sfarno says something incredible. The Sfarno on the Pasuk that says Zichron Trua, that Rosh Hashanah is to be a day, of Zichron Trua. The Sfarno explains, what does it mean, Zichron Trua? Says the Sfarno the following. Zichron Truas Melech Ba. We should use this as a Trua of Malchus, of coronation. Boya Gilu B'Malkam, a day of rejoicing in our King. And says the Sfarno, as we do that, Ro'i Lanu Lismach Az Yoser Al Shehu Malkeinu. What a joy it is. What a joy it is as we hear that shofar blowing, as we stand bedin, as we say again and again, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Yimloch, as we realize how small we are in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinitude, as we realize that we're standing in judgment, Ro'i Lanu Lismoach, how happy we should be. Because you know how lucky we are? We're lucky to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sheyate Klapi Chesed. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain personality, Kivyachol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain attitude of the way He deals with us. He deals with us with Chesed, with love, with Rachamim. The Pasuk that talks about Malchus is the Pasuk in Yeshaya that he quotes. It's a Pasuk that talks about Hashem judging us. It's a Pasuk that talks about Hashem sustaining us. Listen to the Pasuk. Hashem Shofteinu, Hashem judges us, He's our judge. Hashem Echokekeinu, He sustains us. Hashem Malkeinu, He's our Melech. And the Pasuk concludes, Hu Yoshienu, He will save us. Meaning, part of that acceptance of Hashem as the Melech is the recognition that Hashem as the Melech is the only one who loves us so much who will be Moshiach us. And that's a simcha that we could have. And Be'ezus Hashem, when we go into the din on Yom HaDin HaBa Aleinu L'Tova, the Yom HaKadosh V'Hanora that we're the threshold of tonight, and we stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we realize, yes, yes, Hu Malkeinu, yes, Hu Shofteinu, but you know what? Hu Yoshienu. We have that Haftach, we have that promise, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the extent that we're able to feel that awe, that to the extent that we're able to feel that puniness of ourselves and Hashem's great magnitude, that contrast of how small we are in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatness, that should give us the joy to realize that that greatness of Hashem, that incredible, awe-inspiring and awesome mitzvah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about us more than anything else. He looks at us one at a time, each and every one of us. Who are you? Who are me? With our unique abilities, our unique kochos, and He says, I have unique love, unique kesher from me to you that I don't have with any other human being in the world. And He could do that with each and every one of us. And where, therefore, as we go into the Yom HaDin, we could realize there's a certain confidence that we have. A confidence, not an arrogance. A confidence, not a naivete of saying, yes, everything's going to be okay. No, 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 that's not how it works. It's a confidence in knowing that to the extent that I am fearful, to the extent that I am omeid with yira, to the extent that I have a pachad HaDin, to that extent, as the Bali Musar explained, I have the right to be confident in the Din. We should indeed be Zocha because of this attitude that we've all demonstrated by joining in this conference call tonight. We should be Zocha to a year of Bracha, a year of Gesund, a year of health, a year of Klal Yisrael's seeing only had success, a year of good things for ourselves, for our families, a year of Shiduchim for those who need Shiduchim, a year of Yeshuas for those who need Yeshuas, a year of Shalom Bayis, a year of Nachas from children and from grandchildren, a year that we have the opportunity to celebrate Simchas together with our friends, with our family, a year of Yeshua, a year, and we can only imagine the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to provide for us, as difficult the challenges as He might have sent us in the past. We can imagine that His ability to be Meitiv is 500 times, is so much greater than His ability otherwise, and we should be Zocha to benefit from all that bracha. Be'ezus Hashem, v'tashnas chayim v'shalom, and I wish all of you, thank you for joining us this evening, and I wish you a shana kot, l'shana tova, techaseva, techaseimu, la'alta, l'chayim tovim, l'shalom, for you, for your families, and for all of Klal Yisrael. Thank you so much. Good evening.